White Sox fans, let me talk to you. NWI Steve here with my boy Beznik. You might know him better on the Twitter machine as Sox Insane. We're getting ready to get together here. It's opening day eve. So we're going to talk about the 2024 White Sox. It's going to be painful, but somebody's got to do it. Beznik, my man, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, Steven, on the eve of opening day here. Just trying to drum up any excitement I can for what I just saw on the opening day roster that was released by the team. So I could be better, but hey, at least it's baseball.
We made it through winter. We got through spring training. Didn't see a whole lot of positive stuff happen over the course of the winter. I know the Getz bots have been out in full force all winter. He was making the rounds on foul territory this morning here. And that was always interesting. You know, I'm sure that was Eric Kratz's like happiest half hour he's had in a couple of months, because you know he seemingly loves to just take a shit on the White Sox any chance he gets. So you know, getting to do it directly to Chris Getz, I'm sure made him smile there. So but you know, I digress anyway here. So here we are. We are less than 24 hours away from opening day at the corner of 35th and Shields. 3:10 start tomorrow afternoon. White Sox and the hated Detroit Tigers. Garrett Crochet going to be getting the start on the mound, his first opening day start for the Sox. Beznik, what are your thoughts heading into this game tomorrow and the 2024 season overall?
Well, heading into the game tomorrow, I've got pretty low expectations, because I've got low expectations for this whole season. I really don't know what to expect out of Garrett Crochet. This is a guy who has not made a full start since 2019 when he was at the University of Tennessee. He's been a reliever. He hasn't pitched in 2 years. He's never even made a major league appearance that's been longer than 2 2/3 innings. So I don't know how much we're going to see out of him. I don't know how good it's going to be. I'm going in with no expectations for him. But hopefully he can figure out how to get the Tigers out, because I would hate to be in attendance to see a loss to the fucking Detroit Tigers.
It would certainly be a very painful one. I know there's one annoying ass motherfucker that is on the Tigers that has seemingly been a real pain in the ass for the Sox for the last two seasons. And you know, he's going to be amped up tomorrow to try to do some things and try to play a heel, so to speak, for that team from the armpit of this country. So hopefully Garrett Crochet, to your point, can go out there, put together a solid outing, go out there, throw some strikes. He looked very good and looked very comfortable during the course of the spring, but this is going to be a little bit of a new role for him here, taking the ball right away in that first inning. So this is going to be very interesting to see how he's able to handle that and this transitional process that he's got going here to potentially the starting rotation. We still don't know if this is going to be a little bit of a hybrid swing type role, but we're going to kind of find this out together, all of us, tomorrow afternoon here at 3:10. So kind of taking a look at some other things here. You know, opening day is usually the happiest day of the year for a lot of baseball fans. For myself, it's something that I have circled on the calendar months in advance usually. I know for me personally, this is the least excited and the least buzz, not Bradley Squires, the least buzz I have personally ever had heading into an opening day in my all apart of five different decades watching this team here. Obviously, a lot of that just stems from where this team is at right now in their competitive cycle. And a lot of the things that we've seen happen, Anthony and I spent a good portion of the offseason chronicling how Rebuild 2.0 and the window failed to materialize. And I think that's really been the precursor to where this team is at and where the fan base is at mentally here. Beznik, are you kind of in the same boat right now? Do you have any level of excitement for tomorrow being opening day?
I have a little level of excitement just to be there, see some of my friends, have a couple Two Tree Pops, and sit in the stands and watch what is supposed to be professional baseball being played in front of me. But, you know, again, no expectations. And going to your point about the last rebuild and you know, listening to Chris Getz on the podcast today, and they're really asking us to kind of zoom out, right, and look at this thing from a two-year, three-year level, which we just did 4 or 5 years ago, and it ended in epic disaster, as you guys have chronicalized. So I get the apathy. Everyone is justifiably mad. But it is what it is. This is the team. This is what we're going into battle with for 2024. And I am just going to enjoy whatever little good baseball this team is going to play. I don't expect this team to lose 110, 115 games. So I'm just along for the ride and going to try my best to enjoy it. I'm hoping that at least going into the season with low and maybe even no expectations, it's not going to affect my mood on a daily level as it does so often. So hopefully that is the saving grace here, and I can just look forward to seeing Luis Robert slug some homers. Maybe your boy Bannister can turn around some of these pitchers and turn them into something, and maybe some of these veterans can play themselves into some trade value, and we can net a decent return for, you know, rebuild 3.0.
I think that pretty accurately summarizes where a lot of people are at mentally heading into this season. I don't know of anybody that really has any serious expectations for this team. Even the most optimistic Sox fan that are out there are really just kind of tuning this thing out at this point. And it is a very troubling thing to see. And, you know, I talked about this back last August when, you know, the contingent of the Oakland 68s were out here leading their boycott against John Fisher and his desired move to take the team to Las Vegas, and just contrasting where the two fan bases are at. You know, on the A side of it here, you have anger, you have real deep, unadulterated anger. And within the Sox fan base here, you really have apathy more than anything else. And I think apathy is very dangerous. And I think even more dangerous than what you would see from just an anger perspective. And, you know, from my standpoint here, one of the things that I really want to talk about that I'm seeing a lot on social media right now is just a lot of fans out there talking and saying, anytime the team makes a tweet from their official account or anytime the White Sox are mentioned, you always get a cluster of people on social media saying, oh, they're going to lose 120 games. They're going to lose 130 games this year. Why is anybody watching? Why is anybody going? You know, they're an absolute joke. Just move the team, take them and send them to Nashville. What are you people doing? What is this accomplishing? I legitimately don't understand. I mean, at the end of the day here, you've got a team. We know they're not going to be good. We understand that. But sitting there and bitching and harping on this, anytime this team is mentioned on social media for the next 6 months, is not going to accomplish anything. You're not proving any point by going out of your way to tell people that you're not going to watch. You're not proving any point by telling people that they suck. Literally nothing is going to be accomplished from this. And a lot of people are going to take this as a, you know, Steve telling people how to fan thing. And if you want to take it that way, that's fine. All I'm going to say is this. It's annoying as fuck. You can be pissed off about where this team is at. I'm pissed off too. I live and die with this team for 6 months out of the fucking year. And I'm going into this thing expecting it to be the worst season of White Sox baseball in my life. But you know what? I love baseball and I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to be pissed off a lot of nights, but that just comes with the territory. So seriously, save the high and mighty act for something else.
Yeah. I mean, you summed it up pretty well there. I'm slightly concerned about the mental health of those people. If you're already upset now, it's only going to get worse. You know, the pain is going to come, and it starts tomorrow. I've sat through, you and I are the same age. I have sat through and watched some bad White Sox teams. And, you know, it is what it is. And it's another bad White Sox season. You know that they're not going anywhere. You just hope for the best. You enjoy baseball. I love the sport. I don't want to see this team ever move to Nashville. And you know what? They're not going to move to Nashville. They're not leaving the third largest media market in the country to go to a city whose population is less than a million. It's not going to happen. If you want them to leave, I don't know why. If you are a fan, and I'm not telling anybody how to fan or how to feel, I just don't get it. And I don't get why there is that amount of anger when you know this team isn't going to be good. You know they're not going to be good. You don't have the expectations. There's really no reason to get mad. You're going into it with apathy. I totally get that. That's where I'm at. And I sent a message in our group chat. I took a screenshot of how many tickets are available still for opening day. And it looks like
not great, Bob.
There looks like there's thousands in the lower deck that are still available. If you don't want to show up, if you don't want to watch the team, I get it. Check out. Don't get me wrong. It is fun to dunk on that main meet, on that main account and reply with some ridiculousness. And granted, you, I don't know if they set the tone. It doesn't look like they set the tone.
They, in fact, did not set the tone. That is hashtag confirmed.
Yeah. So with that being said, I'm going to enjoy warm summer nights at the park, having beers with my friends. I don't get to go to a lot of games because I just have way too much on my plate right now, but I'm going to enjoy whatever baseball I get. This is my favorite time of the year. And that's what it's about. I might have to mute a lot of people this year. We'll see how it goes.
I think that pretty well sums things up right there. And so I think for all of us here at Sox on Tap, because I know Anthony feels the same, I know Jonathan feels the same. Like I said, we're all pissed off about where this thing is at. None of us thought in the year of our Lord 2024, this is where we were going to be. But here we are. Guess what? It's like John Schriffen said when he was doing his initial media rounds, when he was talking about Sox fans and he was talking about all the podcasts and the fans out there thirsting for information, always wanting more. Because when you are a White Sox fan, you are a White Sox fan for life. So just remember that. All right, let's make things a little lighter right now. Yeah. We kind of you know, got some stuff off our chest here a little bit. It was a little therapeutic. Let's talk opening day traditions. For me, this is going to be my 16th consecutive home opener that I will be in attendance for. Beznik, you, what opening day traditions, if anything, do you have?
So usually a buddy of mine, my buddy Eric, and I go to the game together. He's in the same boat as me where, you know, we just have little kids and we don't have a lot of time to get to games, but we always make it a tradition to go to opening day. We usually hit up a bar in the neighborhood. I think we'll probably hit up Maria's because we love the whiskey selection that they've got there. They've got great beer selection too. And it, you know, surprisingly, for as good of a bar as I think it is, it's usually pretty pretty empty, not very crowded there. Like I'm sure Buffalo Wings and Rings is packed before the game. So if you like a place that's got, you know, a little less traffic and a good selection of liquor, great spot to go to. So we'll do that up for a little bit there. We'll stop by a tailgate or two to say hi and have a beer with some friends. And then it's off to the game. And that's really the gist of it.
Yeah, I know for myself, I mean, I've got a couple of things that I typically will do. You know, there's a local Jewel's that I usually will go and pick up some pops, you know, for the opening day tailgate at. It's kind of just been a little bit of a tradition for me. There was a string there for several years where I would actually run into high school friends or even my dad the morning of the day, just picking up the pops, you know, and seeing him in the parking lot and everything. And he just kind of smirking at me a little bit as I'm, you know, loading up a cooler full of beer into my car to get on the road and get up to the ballpark. And, you know, the other thing that I do actually, my oldest nephew was born the day before the home opener in 2008 when Joe Creedy hit a grand slam in the seventh inning off of Pat Neshek to help the Sox beat the Twins.
I was there.
Yeah, it was a good one right there. That you could say that set the tone for that 2008 season and the blackout that would take place later on that year. You could say that.
That might be hashtag confirmed.
So, you know, one of the things that I always do, you know, after that game, I went down the street to see our good friends at Grandstand, picked up a little White Sox jumpsuit for my nephew. I had to make sure that, listen, I'm born into this hell. You're in it too now. So he's going to be 16 next month and driving a motorized vehicle, which is a scary thought for me here. So one of the things I like to do is before opening day every year, I'll go over to Grandstand, and I did this yesterday. I'll pick up some merch for my three nephews and for my one niece and kind of give them their opening day gifts. To me, I think that's, you know, more important than, you know, things like, you know, Easter gifts or any of that stuff. Opening day is a big day. So that for me is one of my opening day traditions that I always like to take part in right there.
I love it. It sounds like your dad taught you well. It sounds like, you know, you guys are running into each other doing the same thing.
The ironic thing about it is I have never once in my 40 years of life ever seen my dad drink a beer.
Really?
Never. It's a fascinating tale. He's, as I've gotten older here, he's told me some stories about some times in his ute and some of the things. So I kind of understand a little bit now why he doesn't partake very much, you know, every once in a while. He's gotten into Fireball. I don't know if he's like having this like relapse, like thinking he's a college kid or something, but like he'll,
okay.
It's very strange for a 70-year-old man to like be sitting at home, you know, in his recliner late at night, drinking Fireball, watching true crime stories on TV. But I digress. That's not why you called.
But hey, we've all got our drink of choice. If it's Fireball, so be it. So be it. Yeah, I mean, you've got me beat. You said you've got 19 straight.
This will be 16.
I'm on 11. I took a couple of years off there in between 2009. You know, I may have had an experience after the 2009 season that, you know, told me to take it easy on opening days, or was assigned to take it easy on opening days. So I skipped a couple there. But yeah, this is a number 11 for me. You know, obviously we don't count 2020 because nobody could go to the games that year. So, so yeah, this is we're keeping the streak going, and I mean everything you just said is another reason to love that this is starting up again. All the traditions, buying stuff for your nieces and nephews. I'm buying stuff for my kids because, like your nephew, they're born into this hell, and they will be Sox fans. They don't have a choice as long as they care about baseball. So their birthdays are coming up. They're getting a bunch of White Sox stuff. For that. So, I'm looking forward to that. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting this thing started.
Yeah. And listen, you know, Joe DiMaggio famously said it, that a hot dog at the ballpark is better than a steak at the Ritz. And, you know, listen, anytime you can have that first ballpark hot dog, it's therapeutic in a lot of ways. And, you know, as of right now, the forecast looks pretty good. Looks like we're going to get Jose Contreras degrees, some sun out there. So we've had a lot worse, especially in recent years. So being able to get a nice weather forecast in there for the home opener, because you never really know what you're going to be able to get. It's always going to be good from that standpoint right there. So moving on, we talked about this. Look, there's not a lot of expectations for this team here. Bezek, what's one or two storylines with this 2024 White Sox team that you're really following closely heading into this season?
So the thing I want to see, and I posted a sarcastic tweet and about the best pitching staff in baseball and put up all of our guys' stats, and these guys all did great in spring training. They still didn't set the tone, but they had good spring trainings. I know we take that with like a pound of salt that comes with it. But the pitching staff intrigues me a little bit. I want to see, you know, you have talked about it a lot. It's been talked about on Twitter ad nauseum about Brian Bannister and what he can do. He's very well regarded in the industry as being a pitching guru. Ethan Katz, you know, his staffs have had some trouble with control and walking a lot of guys. So if Bannister can come in, rectify that, clean some of these guys up with whatever it is that's been ailing them, along with a better defense, hopefully, behind them, you could see some nice performances come out of this pitching staff. So that is probably, for me, the top storyline. Obviously, there's Luis Robert. We've got probably a bona fide superstar there, the type of player that, you know, we want Jerry Reinsdorf to pay for in free agency that he never will. So watching him play and do his thing every day in center field, mash home runs, looking forward to that. And outside of that, just seeing how some of these trades materialize and if any of these veterans can play themselves into some type of trade value. I think there's guys out there like Moncada. You know, he's making a ton of money, so he might be tough to move. You've got Eloy, who could play himself into that type of trade value. I mean, I think anyone on this team really is a trade target. Maybe even Luis Robert Jr., dare I say. is something you need to possibly consider at the deadline, because this team is probably not going to be good during the rest of his tenure here in Chicago. And you've written some words about that on OnTap Sports. Check out that article if you have a second. So with that being said, that's what I'm looking forward to. Mostly the pitching intrigues me is the thing that is the first thing that come to mind. How about you?
I think we're on the same page with that. Everyone knows I am the lead Bannister bot. I have been since 2019 when I read the MVP machine. I'm sure people are sick of hearing me talk about it at this point here. But at the end of the day, listen, that's my guy. I'm a firm believer in his thought process and how he tries to go about improving a pitching staff. And like you, I think some of the veteran pitchers that have been brought in here, some guys that have had varying levels of success, you know, and I look at a guy like Mike Soroka, who was an all-star in 2019. That was 5 years ago now at this point. And Eric Fetty coming back from Korea, seeing what kind of changes he has made. Can he maybe have a career rebirth similar to like a Miles Michaelis that we saw with the St. Louis Cardinals a few years back? So some of these options here and some of these guys on the pitching side of it are what interest me. It seems as though this team is really focused on trying to build from a pitching and defense standpoint. And in some ways it does make sense if you think about it and if you just understand who owns this baseball team and realize that Jerry Reinsdorf is never going to pay for pitching on the open market. So really going out there and being able to develop that is going to be of paramount importance. So seeing Bannister come in here, see what kind of changes he can make organizationally from the bottom all the way to the top, and if there's going to be a consistent unified messaging with the pitching staff, that's something that I'm watching particularly closely here as we go into 2024.
Yeah, and in War Machine, I didn't read the entire book. I read a couple excerpts from it, and the part about Bannister that I read was with Rich Hill, a pitcher who, you know, career was kind of declining. It looked like he, you know, didn't have much gas left in the tank, but Bannister convinced him to trust his curveball more and throw it more because it had some type of absurd spin rate. And that turned him around. I mean, he might still pitch this year. He's still considering coming back like mid-season, and he's older than me and I'm almost 40. So, you know, bringing that kind of mindset and those kind of ideas and infusing that, could be great. As far as the defense goes, I know these guys on paper have put up great defensive seasons like Lopez and DeJong. I've also seen a lot of players come to the White Sox to improve a certain area and not something about putting on that White Sox uniform might just like zap you of your talent in a specific area. So I'm holding my breath that that's real. And just hoping for the best in that regard. So hopefully, you know, I'm with you 100% on that. That is, we might see 97, 98 to 100 plus losses on the way, but that's what I'll be watching.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute right there. But I think kind of piggybacking off some of the Brian Bannister talk right there and, you know, the excerpt on Rich Hill in the MVP machine, that was one of the things that really did fascinate me, and just his overall thought process and idea as far as trying to understand what each individual pitcher's strengths and weaknesses are, not trying to take that cookie cutter approach. You go back and if you think for a long time, Don Cooper, I think especially his last couple of years here when he was pitching coach of this team, it seemed like everybody, he was trying to fit them into one specific mold. It was always, hey, stay tall, stay over the back of the rubber, and let's get the cutter in there. You know, everybody that came over to this organization had to have that cutter. And, you know, yeah. I think Bannister is kind of the opposite side of that in understanding – you know, hey, listen, some guys are going to be more breaking ball heavy. Other guys are going to be more fastball heavy at the top of the zone. It's looking at some of the underlying metrics right there and understanding and putting together a detailed, individualized game plan for those pitchers. And that's something that whether you're in the starting rotation or in the bullpen, he's looking to do. And again, that's something that they're also trying to implement across all different levels of this organization, not just when they get to Chicago, because we saw this for such a long period of time. The developmental process here seemingly stopping when players get to Chicago. And, you know, that's where rebuild 2.0, I think, failed in a lot of ways, because guys got to the major leagues. They ascended to Chicago at the corner of 35th and Shields, and then they never reached that peak. They never continued to get better the way that we thought that they were going to. And that's a big part of the reason why we are right now. And hopefully Bannister, along with even Josh Barfield on the positional player side, hopefully they can help to kind of turn the tide with that.
I'm hoping for the same thing. And I think we've talked up Bannister especially and Barfield so much. I'm like, if these guys are so good, why did they come to the Chicago White Sox? And if they did, and this is a stepping stone job, that's fine. If they're as good as everybody says they are, hopefully they stick around for a while. Hopefully the ideas that they've put into place stick. Because like we said earlier, this ownership isn't going to spend for star players. We need to have this consistent pipeline of talent coming in through the minors. So, you know, on the pitching front, Pedro Grifol had kind of an interesting comment the other day about attacking leverage.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, he got asked who the closer is and who he thinks the closer should be. And, you know, he said, well, if it's not Dennis Eckersley coming out of that bullpen, then there's no set closer. And, you know, it's kind of sounds like playing matchups. Closer by committee is another thing that we used to call it. But, you know, nowadays we say things like leverage, which basically means the matchup. What were your thoughts on that?
I've tried my best to really tune out everything that Mr. Clean says, but in all honesty, I think that might have been one of the most cogent things that he has said since he got this job with the Chicago White Sox organization. And that's saying a lot. You know, there's a lot of managerial speak that comes out of his mouth and a lot of just open mouth say words without really saying anything. I think he kind of went in a roundabout way of saying something that actually is logical here, but that's just kind of who he is. So it's going to be fascinating to see whether or not he follows through on that. He talked a lot in his introductory press conference, you know, when he got hired here, about looking at things and doing things from an analytical standpoint. And then now we have him talking about Yoán Moncada needing to bunt in the two. So who the hell knows what's going to happen here with this?
Yeah, I mean, I want to see if he can deploy that correctly, because there's some nuance that goes into that. But I feel like, hey, maybe he's listening to Bannister. Maybe he's listening to Katz and telling, and they're the ones, maybe he has an earpiece in with them telling him exactly what to say if he gets asked a question about pitching. Hopefully he listens to them and does it that way, because there is no clear closer in that bullpen, you know. Brebbia was kind of the presumed closer after he signed, but he's been dinged up and hasn't really pitched much. But we also need to have a lead going into the ninth inning.
That's which, big news if true.
Which this lineup, from what I saw on Twitter.com, doesn't look like is going to produce many leads.
No, I don't think it's going to, and I think that is going to lead us into our next area of discussion, as painful as this is going to be. So, day before the season, we've got 162 of these bad boys to go. Beznik, what are you predicting the 2024 White Sox record to be when the season comes to a close?
So, I looked at everything top to bottom, how many home runs this team could potentially hit, the on-base percentage, all of those things, you know, taken into account, and, you know, the pitching staff with, you know, the upside that we talked about. And my guess came back, best case scenario, everything goes right the way we want it to. The pitching staff performs the way we want to. Everybody stays healthy. They'll win 70 games. I think that's like the best case scenario for this team and where they max out. So I'm going to still be a little more on the optimistic side, I think, and say that 66 and 96 is about where I see this team coming in at, because let's be honest, they're not going to stay healthy. They're going to have to pick guys up. They're going to have to bring in, you know, Tukey and other players up from the minors to fill in. Don't get me wrong. I'm the number one Tukey fan. He's my king. and see how it goes. And then you might have a mass exodus at the trade deadline if any of these guys actually play into some trade value. So that being said, I'm being optimistic, and I'm going to give this team 66 and 96.
You are certainly more optimistic than I am. I wrote this piece over at ontapsportsnet.com just a couple, two, 3 days ago, where I said that I think that this is going to be the worst team of my lifetime, which is saying something because I just lived through the worst team of my lifetime a year ago. I have this team pegged at 58 and 104. I know a lot of the betting lines out in Vegas. Everybody knows I'm a big better guy. I love seeing
huge
bets.
Huge
bets. Daily bets every day on Twitter.com. It drives me. It's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And I know
bet and gas prices.
That's true. Yes, yes. We have to monitor that, especially as we get into summer driving season here. So that's very important right there. Who knows? Maybe your betting winnings can help to offset some of the rising gas prices. But again, that's not why you called. At the end of the day, I see a lot of the lines being set at that 66.5 win total. I'm just struggling to see where these extra 5 wins are coming from a year ago. And this is some of the stuff I highlighted in my piece a couple of days ago. This team ranked in the bottom 5 in just about every pitching category a year ago. And you remove Dylan Cease. You remove Mike Clevenger. You remove a half a good season of Lucas Giolito. You remove Gregory Santos. And you replaced it with absolutely no certainty whatsoever. Couple that with the fact that on the offensive side of it, you again were bottom 5 in on base percentage, home runs, slugging percentage, and they made no tangible efforts to really improve that. Sure, Paul DeJong might hit 14, 15 home runs right there, but that's not going to move the needle a lot. Like you talked about, Yoan Moncada is probably going to get hurt at some point, even though he's in his contract year. He's playing for his baseball life. We heard that a lot this spring too. Eloy as well, looking to try to drive up some trade value so maybe they can get his money off the books. I don't think anybody's expecting Noodle Boy to all of a sudden be worth that $15 million he's going to make this year. So really, you've got on the offensive, on the positional side of it, you've got Luis Robert Jr. and a big pile of crap. So I'm just struggling to see where these extra wins are coming from here. And to your point, if any of these guys like Eloy, like Moncada, you know, maybe even like a Michael Kopech, if any of these guys perform well heading into the July trade deadline here, they're not going to be here in the second half of the season. And I know there's some excitement about Colson Montgomery being ranked the number 9 overall prospect in the sport. And Brian Ramos had done some nice things playing in the Arizona Fall League and last year down in AA Birmingham. I feel like if we learned anything over the course of the last 5 to 6 years of our lives watching this team, you should not be expecting these guys to come up and make an immediate, meaningful impact for this team. I want it to happen. I want Colson Montgomery to be good. I want it more than just about anything. But to expect that, I think, is just unrealistic. So I just struggle to see where these extra wins are coming from. And as I said, I think they're going to be 58 and 104. This is going to be the third worst winning percentage in the history of the franchise. I know it sounds super negative and super bleak.
Got to call it like it is.
I don't see it any other way.
You don't think that playing fast and grinding out some victories, bunting guys over, winning the game 90 feet at a time is gonna squeak out a couple extra wins?
I do think, like, I've talked a lot about the importance of getting that 90 feet. And, you know, if you go back to 2020, 2021, when they were one of the best base running teams in the league, that was a big part of it because they would go first to third, second to home, better than just about any team in the league, as well as their stolen base efficiency. But most of those guys are gone now at this point. And so you've got just a much different roster that is out there. And for all the talk about the defensive improvements that have been made, and those are real heading into this season here, I don't see enough to where that's going to make up 5 wins just on the defensive side, just because you're going to have fewer innings where you give a team 4 and 5 outs personally.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I keep going back to is the pitching staff. And if, you know, obviously we need to score runs, and that's, they're going to be hard to come by. But if Bannister is as good as we think he is or want him to be, then this pitching staff, I mean, what's a reasonable expectation there? What's the good barometer to say, yeah, Brian Bannister is the
real It's pronounced thermometer.
Thermometer. What's the right thermometer? What's the right temperature for us to look for to say, yeah, Brian Bannister makes a difference? What is the Brian Bannister index or effect? Does this have to be a team that is middle of the pack in terms of team ERA, whip, strikeouts? You know, obviously walks have been a huge problem for the last couple of years. Like, what are we looking for this team to end up at the end of the season from a pitching standpoint to say, yeah, Bannister made a difference?
The biggest thing that I'm going to be watching for is a decrease in walks. That has really been an Achilles heel for this pitching staff over the last couple, 2-3 years. And I think at the same time, to expect Bannister to have that meaningful of an impact right out of the chute here in his first season within the organization, I think is unrealistic in a lot of ways. At the same time, you know, you look at some of these new faces that have been brought in externally. I talked about Mike Soroka, Eric Fetty. You know, some of these guys, I wouldn't be at all shocked if they struggled the first half of the season or were just inconsistent. And so, you know, what I'm really going to be looking for is, by the time we get to August, are these guys able to turn a corner? Are they able to have a more consistent approach when they're out there? Are they going out there? Are they attacking hitters? Are they being aggressive in the strike zone? Is the strikeout to walk ratio in line with, you know, maybe just a mid-level pitching staff across the league? So I think if they can get, you know, most of the tangible pitching metrics in that 15 to 20 range by the year, by the end of this year, I think that would be successful here. Like I said, they're a bottom five team in just about all of those categories right now. So if they can get in that 15 to 20 range, to me, I think that's going to be a big win heading into 2025 here.
Yeah, that would be a huge improvement. And, you know, looking back at, and I'm not going where people might think I'm going with this, but I'm looking back at the Arizona Diamondbacks, a team that snuck into the playoffs at 82-80 and got to the World Series. Their pitching staff overall, league-wise, is average. Their hitting league-wide is average. They hit less home runs than the Chicago White Sox last year. But what were they really good at was defense and base running. They're elite in those categories. So I don't know how much of that influence comes from Josh Barfield to
Bill. We're just going to say it's a lot, and we've got him now.
Okay, great, great. So, you know, okay, so I'll be looking for the same things if that's the case. You mentioned Colson Montgomery, and it's been hashtag confirmed that he's starting the season in AAA. He did not have a lot of time in AA last year. I think it was something like 40 games or so. To me, that seems like a little bit of an aggressive assignment. And everyone is also expecting him to be in Chicago at some point in 2024. So are we moving too fast here? I remember way back, and you probably remember, the White Sox had a top prospect by the name of Mike Caruso, who pretty much went from single A to a short stint in triple A to the major leagues. And he hit 300 his rookie year, and you thought maybe he would be something, but he was out of the league like 2 years later. And we've seen them rush other prospects like Andrew Vaughn. Is this something we should be worried about?
Me personally, I am concerned about it. And I wrote about this early on in the offseason about the idea of not rushing Colson Montgomery and Edgar Quiro, the two most important positional prospects on this team. And you can also throw a guy like Ryan Ramos in there. But with Montgomery and Quiro in particular here, I really think that these guys need more seasoning. Colson Montgomery only had like 240 plate appearances in AA spread out over two seasons because he did miss so much time a year ago. So to me, that's a big concern right now. And if you're going to start him in Charlotte is just a notorious hitter's park. I mean, it's a sandbox in there. So there's going to be a lot of misleading offensive numbers that are going to come out of that ballpark right there. Now, I've seen some people saying that, you know, some more advanced pitching is, you know, kind of permeating through AAA now than it has in maybe the last 10 to 12 years or so. And that might be the case, but for my money right now, I personally would like to see Colson Montgomery not come to Chicago until August. And I know a lot of people are going to hear that and they're going to say, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, they need to get him up here and get him acclimated to playing at the major league level. To your point there, they have rushed so many prospects. I mean, you look at what they did with Gordon Beckham. You mentioned Andrew Vaughn. You know, Colson Montgomery is one of the guys that is really going to be looked at as a cornerstone of the next potentially good White Sox team here. And I think that the idea of accelerating his ascent to the major leagues is a mistake in a lot of ways, because he just doesn't have that full minor league seasoning to this point here. And I do think it is overly aggressive. So I hope that they don't go and like really hit hyperdrive on this thing and try to have him up by like Memorial Day or June 1st.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a disaster. I don't want to see him up here any earlier than August. Like you said, I would even keep him down till September until rosters expand. There's no reason to rush it. He's not going to save the season. You're not looking for an infusion at the end of the year with some fresh legs to get you down the stretch into a playoff run. Keep him down there until September. The more I think about it, if they are doing this aggressive assignment and they do call him up sooner than that, you know, I'm starting to sour on him. I'm starting to sour on him as a whole. I look at his minor league stats and a lot of the value there is in walks. You know, he's posting a 20% plus walk rate. Like, that is not going to happen at the major league level. He's got to learn how to hit. He's got to, you know, hone his position at shortstop. He needs more time. I don't want to see him here. I don't want him to be to flake out. But like you said, the stats are going to go crazy in Charlotte. It's a launching pad, and we're going to have fans on Twitter going crazy in May saying, why isn't this guy in Chicago? Paul DeJong sucks. So that is something that I foresee. There's a preseason prediction for you.
All right, and I can definitely see that one coming to fruition here. So you led me into our final kind of discussion point here for our broadcast. We're talking predictions here. Beznik, who is going to be your team MVP and your team Cy Young in 2024?
Well, I mean, the team MVP, I mean, come on. It's Luis Robert. How could it possibly be anybody else on that team? Nobody can field their position as well as he can. Nobody can hit as well as he can. You know, he's probably, should he stay healthy, be our only all-star on the position side. So MVP easily Luis Robert. And then the Cy Young, I'm going to go with Mike Soroka. I know, you know, we take spring training with a grain of salt, but this is, and he hasn't been good in a while. It's been since 2019, but he's hopefully fully recovered from the Achilles injuries. I think he had two back-to-back that kept him out of baseball for a while. And I think that, you know, with him coming in with Brian Bannister, Ethan Katz, they can get him back to some semblance of being, I want to say he was probably one of the better pitchers in baseball, an all-star caliber pitcher when he was on top of his game. So, that is, you know, it's hard to choose from this group, but that's who I'm going with for my Cy Young. Sounds like I stole your choice there a little bit.
You did steal my thunder there on the Cy Young pick right there. So I'm going to have to pivot a little bit, and I'm going to go with Eric Fetty then in that circumstance here. We've seen guys, you know, go to Korea, go to Japan, kind of reinvent themselves a little bit and kind of use some of those Asian leagues as almost like a laboratory of innovation, so to speak, from a pitching side or even some of the positional player sides. I remember Eric Thames a few years ago going to Korea, reworking his swing, and then he came back with the Milwaukee Brewers and became a pretty productive power hitter for the Brewers for a couple of seasons there. So I'm hopeful that Eric Fetty is a guy that figured some stuff out when he was pitching in Korea there. And I know Brian Bannister has been very high on him, working with him. And so was Logan Webb, a guy that, you know, crossed paths kind of together with the San Francisco Giants there. So that's my pick on the Cy Young side of it. MVP side of it, it is Luis Robert Jr. There is no other alternative here at this point. You know, you can talk about, you know, maybe Eloy, if you want, thinking maybe this is the year he taps into 40 home run potential. But again, if he has that good first half, that's going to drive up that trade value come, you know, late July right there. And I wouldn't anticipate the Sox hesitating to move him and his contract if they have the opportunity to do so here. So that's what I'm going to go with. And final discussion point for us here. Again, opening day eve, 2020-24 season. Beznik, what is one surprise player or event that you think we're going to see happen here in 2024?
One surprise event, I think that you're going to see a much better, I don't know how much of a surprise it's going to be, because I think a lot of people are starting to just expect it, but I think we're going to see a much better Michael Kopech. I think going to the bullpen and just, you know, refocusing on three hitters coming out of the pen in whatever leverage Pedro's trying to tackle in the situation is going to benefit him a lot. He doesn't have to go five or six innings. He can just kind of come out there and empty the tank with his fastball and not have, you know, a lot more. He gives him a lot less to think about and, you know, less to focus on. And I think that that's going to benefit him a lot. I don't know if that's a surprise pick, though. I feel like a lot of people are saying that.
I think in a lot of ways there, you could definitely label that as a surprise. I think there are plenty of people within the fan base that have really written Michael Kopech off. And he really, in a lot of ways, is at a crossroads in his career right now. You know, given this transition back to the bullpen, I mean, this is something that's going to be very important for him. And if he can establish himself as a useful high leverage reliever, you know, the Sox will have an interesting discussion and some interesting thoughts that they're going to have to entertain here. You know, could they get some value for him at the trade deadline from a contending team? Or do you look at him and say, hey, you know what, this could be our long-term closer of the future? You know, I know a lot of talk about Jordan Leisure making this club, you know, right out of the chute here, but, you know, maybe Kopech could be that guy if the control and command levels improve to where they were in 2021 when he was pitching primarily out of the bullpen. So I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, an off-the-wall prediction right there. For me personally, the thing I'm watching for and the thing that I am looking at from a surprise standpoint, I think it gets done. And when I say I think it gets done, I mean a new ballpark at the 78. I don't know how. I know things have been kind of quiet and been dormant over the last couple, 2-3 weeks here on this front. You know, the spawn of Satan himself went down to Springfield to talk to legislators, and there's a lot of consternation going back and forth about this. But it's been talked about on these airwaves and a number of other different airwaves out there. There is but one man in the city of Chicago that has been able to get new stadiums built in the last 100 years. And that man is Jerry Reinsdorf. He's got a lot of political favors that he can cash in at this point. He's played both sides of the aisle. He's done it very well. I think it happens. I think we're going to see fractures and divisions across city residents as a result of this year, because we know Jerry doesn't want to pay any money out of his own pocket.
Not for this.
But I think he finds a way to get it done, because to his credit, and I hate giving him credit, anybody who knows me knows this, he is one hell of a negotiator. So I think when it is all said and done, sometime this summer, it will be announced. And I would not be at all shocked if we have shovels in the ground at the corner of Clark and Roosevelt sometime this summer here, working on the next home for your Chicago White Sox.
It's pretty crazy to think about, but if they want to get this stadium by the time the lease is up, they've got to get shovels in the ground pretty soon, because what is it, 2029?
It's, yeah, the lease expires after 2029, but if you recall a couple weeks back, you know, when he made his trip down to Springfield, it was being floated out there. And I had kind of speculated about this a little bit about, would they try to maybe buy out the last 2 years of that lease? Because it's only $1.5 million per year. So, you know, a low leverage reliever for $3 million right there to get into the 78 for the opening day, 2028, and turn on that economic revenue faucet that they are looking for. I wouldn't be surprised if, like I said, if they can find a way to get all of this done, if we have shovels in the ground here this summer.
Well, that'll give us something to talk about other than this team, which happened quite a bit in the off season. A lot of consternation about parking, but I'm sure that public transportation and the parking situation will be rectified. It'll be an exciting time, and you know, without going too much into detail, I think for the organization, the future of the franchise, that's a step in the right direction.
I agree 100%. I know that's going to make a lot of people mad. I had some conversations with some people in the neighborhood yesterday who shared my thoughts and are of the mindset and understanding that at the end of the day, this is about money and it's about driving up the franchise valuation, because Jerry Reinsdorf is not going to be around forever. I know we think about that a lot, but this is all about positioning his family to be able to extract as much as they possibly can when they sell this team, when his reign of terror comes to an end. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. And I fear in the back of my mind that at the 78, the new owner of the Chicago White Sox might erect a statue of Jerry Reinsdorf.
If that happens, I will go out of my way to go and give it the finger every single time I attend a game at that new ballpark in the 78. I can assure you of that. I already go out of my way to give him the finger every time when I pass that mural underneath the viaduct on the corner of 35th Street, which, by the way, the clown nose is back up there.
Nice.
I was there. I was in the neighborhood yesterday. I saw it. The clown nose is hashtag back. So
we love it.
Whoever is responsible for that, thank you for your service. We genuinely appreciate that.
Thank you, sir or ma'am.
And that's going to wrap things up for us here, the Sox on Tap 2024 season preview show. Please go to ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. Beznik, our guy, he's got a lot of musings on the Sox, looking at things from big picture stuff to day-to-day game recaps. Hopefully they don't kill him this year. He's doing it so that you don't have to, folks. So go out there and give him a read. Beznik, anything you want to close down with?
No, I don't. Let's try to enjoy whatever good baseball we get this year. Like Steve said, subscribe, follow us on Twitter. We're gonna try to make the most of it this year in a bad season. We're gonna have some fun.
It's all we can do at this point. So thanks for joining us here this evening at Sox on Tap. We'll be back in very short order. Stay tuned later tonight. Episode 5 of Rebuilt, featuring that slob, Kenneth W.O., and the delightful Patrick Nolan, P. Knowles. So we got double the pleasure for you here tonight. So for all of us here at Sox on Tap, White Sox for life.
White Sox forever.